It's the weekend, which means it's time for Jill on Money, the show that makes money fun and just happens to answer all your financial questions. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome to Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. And we're delighted that you're joining us today. Yay! Have a big show planned. We have a big show planned every week. Just want to make sure that you know how to get in touch with us. You can always call us, 855-411-JILL. You can send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. You can follow us on Twitter. And if you like this show, then you might say, hey, I want to find out what the last couple of shows sounded like. Go to the Jill on Money website, jillonmoney.com. Easy. And you can find some other stuff, which is kind of great. And we have a blog and all our resources are there. So everything is terrific. So right now, let's go and start the program with a caller. It is Cindy who's on the line in California, right, Mark? Okay. Hi, Cindy. Welcome to Jill on Money. How are you?
Just fine, Jill. Good afternoon to you. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course. Tell me how I can help you out.
Well, I'm hoping you can. I am 56 years old, and my father passed away about a year ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. But the good news is he left us all pretty well off. Here in California, it's a pretty good amount to live off of. It was left about $2.5 million.
Great.
There's two lawsuits. Oh, I know. Really blessing. And there's two lawsuits that are going on right now. Of course, we're going to get some of the money hasn't come in yet. But I do have about $900,000 in the bank right now, just sitting in the bank.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. And $800,000 of it already. Well, this is another. There's also an additional $800,000
mm-hmm.
that's already been invested in an annuity, which was an IRA that my father had. There's three of us children, and we split it three ways and rolled it over because of the taxes into an annuity
mm-hmm.
with a stockbroker that was our family stockbroker. But I do not want to, or family financial advisor, I guess I should say. And I really do not want to still utilize him. I want to break off on my own and get my own financial advisor.
Yeah.
No clue on how to find one or shop for one.
Okay, we're going to help you. This is great. Right. Now, so first of all, the money that was, I mean, the annuity is already done. So
right.
What is it about this person you don't like so much? Just out of curiosity.
There's a lawsuit that's going on right now between my brother and I, sadly. He was the executor. And there was an additional IRA account that was my father's. And there was no beneficiary list for it. And so consequently, what I understand is the law is that because there were three children, we were supposed to split it three ways, and there was no wife.
Right.
So what they said was my brother had the same name as my father. He was a junior. My father was a senior, though.
Yeah.
And my father had he pulled some paperwork out that my father had signed
mm-hmm.
and signed it on the line saying that he was to name the beneficiaries later. No Social Security number.
Oh,
no nothing.
My God.
They tried to make it out that it was my brother's entire amount. And that was $1.5 million.
Oh, for crying out loud. That is
right.
so stinking.
I had to hire a lawyer and all
oh,
this.
Oh, brother.
So consequently, I don't trust the guy. Plus that, he's given out confidentiality on, you know, he tells me what they're doing and so that
no.
kind of thing.
Okay. We're done with him.
Not bad.
We're done with him. The annuity money, what kind of annuity is it in? Do you know?
I don't know. I do know the company that has it. That's about it. I do know that I'm getting income off of it. I'm getting $3,300 a month off of it.
Okay. So actually, it's an immediate annuity, meaning the money, you pop the money in and it started spitting money out as income immediately.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, great. Now, you said you're 56. Let's go back to you for a second. You're 56. Do you have some kids?
My daughter is grown, and she's doing quite well financially. She's already a pharmacist. But also, I was on waiting to collect my disability. I didn't tell you that part. I have physical disabilities.
Okay.
So I do not work at this time. So.
Okay. Are you on disability? Do you have SSDI or not?
I do not, no. I was in the process of waiting for it. As a matter of fact, that was a whole other thing with another lawyer.
God, you and your legal counsel, goodness gracious.
I have three of them going right now, yeah.
Oh.
So my father died in the meantime. So anyway.
Okay, so right now, what are you living on income-wise? That $3,300 a month?
Yes, Yes, and what's in the bank if I need to dip into that, and I don't like doing that.
I know, but that's what it's there for. So I'm sure that your father would be very happy that security has really come in very, very much in a big way in your life. What do you think you need to live on a monthly basis?
I've been told about $6,000 a month.
Okay.
Here, yeah.
All right.
The cost of living here. Uh-huh.
Okay, that seems good. And do you own your own home?
I do not. That was one thing that I do want to do out of that money is buy a home cash.
Okay, you're not going to buy a home in cash yet. Relax. All right, hold on a second. So you got $800 in the annuity, but that's the that gives you the $3,300 a month. The $900 in the bank. And then is there more money coming eventually or not?
Yes, absolutely. Let me share that with you. The losses that we were doing, I was supposed to get, if we would have split it three ways equally, it should have been $500,000 apiece.
Okay.
$1.5 million. Instead of the $500,000, though, we're doing a settlement right now, and I haven't gotten the money yet. I just signed to do the settlement, and I am getting
$265,000. Uh-huh. So when all is said and done, so you'll have your $900, and then you're going to add the $265,000 to that. So you're going to have your $1.165 million.
And there's more.
Oh yeah, tell me more.
My father happened to die from asbestos.
Oh geez.
So there's an asbestos lawsuit.
Hmm.
The attorney there so far, with all of his money said and done, our cut should be getting about $200,000 from that, but we're still litigating on that so far.
Right.
It's a $200,000.
I'm gonna leave that off.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah,
I haven't
right?
seen that yet.
Okay. All right. Now we're gonna go to a break, and when we come back, we're gonna talk a little bit about this desire of yours to, number one, buy a home. Number two, we're going to get into what you need to be looking for in a financial planner, because that's very easy. We know how to do that. Just so happens I'm a certified financial planner myself, the senior CFP board ambassador, as a matter of fact. So I'm going to help you right away, Miss Cindy from California. And you know, it's funny, you listen to this story and it's kind of unbelievable, just the twists and turns and legal issues. I'm sorry that that's happened, but at the end of the day, hopefully you've got enough money to do what you need to do. We need to remember, gang, this is what we need to do. We have to come up with $6,000 a month, right? She's getting $3,300 right now. So there you have it. We've got that. We're going to come up with her $2,700 a month and a few other questions. And I think we're going to have a game plan ready for Miss Cindy in California. You are listening to Jill on Money. And the phone number here is 855-411-JILL. The email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. And don't forget to check out our new podcast, Better Off. You can get it on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, anywhere else you find your favorite podcast. Just subscribe and boom, it'll be there twice a week. All right. When we return, more with Cindy. We'll be right back.
From rookie investors to savvy veterans, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Call now, 855-411-JILL, or email askjill@jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. 855-411-JILL is our phone number. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. We're on the line with Cindy, who's inherited a bunch of money from her dad's estate. $800,000 is in an annuity. It's generating $3,300 a month. Cindy needs about $6,000 a month. So that leaves us with $2,700 a month that we have to kind of come up with. Now, the good news is that Cindy has about $1.2 million that's available to help fund that gap. And you know what's so cool, Cindy? During the break, I did a little calculation, and I realized that you have again, not including what you may get from that other lawsuit, $1.165 million, which essentially, if you had that invested, because again, it's in the bank now, but if you were investing that over the long term and you're young, we could pull probably about 3% of that out on an annualized basis. And 3% turns out to be about $35,000 a year, which turns out to be exactly what you need to get to that $6,000 a month. It's pretty amazing. Wow. It's like almost right there. So you can breathe. Now, that does not include Social Security. You will be entitled to some Social Security, you know, in 10 years when you reach your full retirement age. So that's something that will just be extra. And if you were to get that asbestos settlement and there were to be $200,000, then indeed you would even have that to add to the pile of money. So all of this is good. Mm-hmm. Here's where you put a wrinkle in my beautiful plan, because you know you are putting a wrinkle in it.
I didn't know.
You said, I want to buy a home in cash. Mm-hmm. Well, if you were to do that, then I don't have $1.165 million, do I?
No.
Right?
And no, that's correct.
That's what turns into a difficult situation. So I am going to advise you. First of all, we're going to talk about your advisor thing, but you'll get a second opinion. You'll talk to an advisor. My sense of this is that you should not buy a house, because you will need this income that is generated from the portfolio. And if you buy a house, how much would you have to buy a home for? Give me about the price that you think you'd have to pay.
A medium home here in Fresno is about $300,000.
Right. So if I have $300,000 less, then all of a sudden I don't have that $2,700 a month I need.
Okay.
So what's the rent that you would pay right now?
Right now, I'm in an apartment. I'm paying $1,500 a month.
Oh, my God. You got to stay. You got to be a renter. There's no reason to buy. Now, I'm going to change my mind. If for some reason you find that, you know, you, oh, my God, this asbestos lawsuit just dumped $300,000 in my lap. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then buy a house.
Okay.
Okay. But if this is all the money you have, do not use this. You know, you should have $1.2 million or so. 1.1. Let's call it 1.2. That's what you should have. That's what you need to generate the income you need. And anything that comes on top of that, mm-hmm. I think you probably can use for a house, but not the big chunk. Okay. So now we're into the idea around an advisor. I think that it would be incredibly helpful for you to find someone who is a fiduciary advisor, someone who puts your interests first. And what I can do to help you out is there's two things. Number one is you can go to letsmakeaplan.org, which is the certified financial planning website. So it's letsmakeaplan.org. And you put in, you know, you put in Fresno, California, or your zip, and you get CFPs who are in that market. And that's one way to find it. Another way would be for you to go to a different website. And this is a slightly different kind of advisor. This is a fee-only advisor at NAPFA, N as in Nancy, A, P as in Peter, F-A, .org, NAPFA.org. Okay. And what you would do then is you do the exact same thing. You say, here's my address, here's my zip code. Now, the NAPFA advisor, slightly different, may also be a CFP, but NAPFA is an organization which basically says, we do not take any commissions. So no annuities, no insurance products, no nothing like that. And if you wanted to even just pay someone to give you a financial plan, that you just want a separate plan without any investments or anything like that, you might be able to work with a NAPFA advisor. So what I think that either of those things are good. And what I'm also going to do is I'm going to get Mark to give me your email address. I want to send you a link to the 10 questions you should be asking a financial advisor, so you have that in hand. Okay. And that way we're going to help you find someone. Look, Cindy, you've been through a lot. Okay. And I want to be clear that I think you probably have a good gut sense of the type of person you want to work with. And I would trust that gut. So even if you find on any of these websites or your friends say, oh, go talk to my financial guy, gal, whatever. If you get that flutter in your stomach that something doesn't feel right, I want you to trust it. I do not want you to find an excuse to work with some other person who's going to, you know, put you into something that may not be in your best interest. I really think that's important. So so Marco sent me your email address. I will send you a link, or he'll send you the link because he's very good at these things. And if and you let us know if you've met with some folks and you like them or you don't like them, let us know how it goes. And if you're having a problem finding someone, we can help you as well. Okay?
Thank you so very much. I will sleep better at night now, Miss Jill. I deeply appreciate that.
Oh, my pleasure. Good luck to you, and go easy. No rush to do anything, okay?
I'm glad I spoke with you first before I went and bought a house, that's for sure.
That's for sure. All right, take care.
You too. Thank you.
So you see, gang, the idea of I want to live in a house. I have a house. The big problem here, and I want everyone to be clear. The problem with buying a house is not that I don't want you to buy a house. It's that you're using money that we need to be working for you in a different way. And it would be something if Cindy were paying a chunk of money in rent that was so huge and we were worried about it, that would be different. But her rent's so affordable. I don't see, you know, why we would buy a $300,000 place when your rent is $1,500 bucks a month. Doesn't make sense to me. So you also heard me talk about some resources. Remember, and on our website, if you go to the blog page, you can go to the right side. There's a bunch of resources. And we have our How to Choose a Financial Advisor 10 Questions to Ask. We have a link to the CFP website. We have a link to the NAPFA website. We even have a link to a Financial Planning Association's website. But the most important one, I think, is you start with a CFP board. That's the one I like. That's why I put it on my front door. And it's not a guarantee, but it's a good place to start for sure. And you just really have to be aware that there's so many different kinds of financial professionals. That's why we wrote that 10 questions you must ask. Okay. Mark, how was that soup? Pretty good? Yeah, I snarfed down a little lentil soup. I'm starving here. I'm going to eat my arm off. I'm literally going to eat my arm off. I think my left, because I like to, I do write with my right arm. I am a righty. I always wished I were a lefty. It was been so much better for sports. It's better to be a sports. You're a lefty? See, if you're a southpaw, it is a huge advantage. Although I'm one of the few, I was one of the few girls on my basketball team who could shoot with her left hand. That was something my dearly departed dad taught me. Always know how to go to your left, honey. Maybe there's no other better advice that you could have in life. Always know how to go to your left. All right. You're listening to Jill on Money. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. askjill@jillonmoney.com. And follow us on Twitter @JillOnMoney. When we return, more of your questions. We'll be right back.
Young, old, it doesn't matter. She's here to help you. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
Come fly with me. Let's fly away.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you can use that puts me in a good mood, Mark. Thanks. That's good. All right. If you've got a financial question, we want to hear from you. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. And you can also send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. All right, let's see. We've got a lot of emails here. So thank you so much for sending us emails. We appreciate that. Did you see the one from the guy at the Fed, Mark? That was cool. Got a little note from someone at the Chicago Fed, which is cool. All right, Eric writes, I feel like I have a pretty good understanding of what stocks are and what I'm doing with my money when I invest in stock indexes, but not so much with bonds. I would love to hear you explain some beginner level information about what bonds are and if and why they should have a place in my portfolio. Great question. So, you know, I think that this is actually a great question also because everyone thinks about it. And, you know, you say, oh, of course I have bonds in my portfolio, but you don't exactly know, do you? You know? So here's what I want you to think about this, all right? When you have a company, a publicly traded company, there are basically two ways to finance their operations. So it's through stock, when you have ownership, and through bonds. And think about a bond as an IOU. You are actually lending money to some entity. It can be a company, but it can also be the U.S. government. It can be a state, a municipality. And when you lend that money, you do it for some set period of time. It could be 30 days, could be 30 years. And there's a fixed rate of interest. Fixed rate of interest because that's why we call it fixed income. Okay? At the end of the term, the borrower just repays that loan that you gave them, okay? Here's the tricky part. Bond prices fluctuate based on the general direction of what's going on in the interest rate world. So here's how it works. Pretend you're like right now, you own a 10-year U.S. government bond, okay? And that bond you bought 10 years ago, I'm making this up because it's probably 20 years ago that it would pay this, but it's paying you 5%. Okay. Well, right now, if you go to actually lend the government money as a bond, you buy a bond or you lend the U.S. government money, and you do that for, say, 10 years, what are you going to get? You're not going to get that 5%. You can only get 2.3%, 2.4%. That's all you're going to get. So you're holding a 5% bond. The government's paying you a 5% interest rate. It stands to reason that if you go out and compare that to going out and getting a new bond out in the market, what would happen? You would actually get a lower rate, which makes your bond more valuable. So that's why the price goes up, right? Relatively speaking, think about it this. A bond is always priced relatively speaking. Now, conversely, let's say that your bond is paying 1%, but your friend can go out and buy a new bond, and that's paying 4%. No one's interested in your bond, right? How do you get them interested in your bond? You drop the price. That's why we always say bond prices move in the opposite direction of prevailing interest rates, okay? So if you're hearing interest rates are going up, you may be thinking my individual bond or my bond mutual fund could drop in value. Okay, now, let's dial this down a little bit more. You know, a lot of people think bonds are safe, but, you know, bond investors face a number of risks. So we have just described one, which is interest rate risk. When interest rates move up or down, the price of your bond is going to move. Another one is called credit risk. So what does that mean? It means that the entity to which you lend money cannot pay you back. Okay, not going to do that with the government, but let's say it's a little teeny tiny company, or let's say it was an unstable emerging market, right? Okay, so now we have interest rate risk, and we have default risk, and what's another risk? Inflation. Because even if your bond is paid in full, whatever that rate of interest you've gotten over the term can be worth less if prices are rising. Okay. So why is it that bonds are put in portfolios with all these risks? Well, they do act differently than stocks. First of all, there's this constant stream of income, you know, but the most important thing to remember is that you can lose money in the bond market, though the magnitude of fluctuations does tend to be smaller than those in stocks and other riskier asset classes. So what you need to be really mindful of is that bonds are part of a portfolio because they do act differently than stocks in different environments, and they are assets that can contain risk, and you can control some of the risk. You can say, hey, I want more interest paid to me, so I'm going to lend out for a longer period of time. Well, the longer the duration, obviously different things can happen between now and the time you get your money back. Or you can lend your money to a very risky company. It's called a junk bond, or to a frontier market of some sort, you know, some very teeny tiny government willing to, like Greece, willing to pay you a lot of interest, but they may never pay you back. So in a rising interest rate environment, which, you know, we're in right now, rates are going to generally be rising over time. What you should try to do is keep your duration a little bit shorter. You keep your quality a little bit higher. And you be mindful that prices can drop. But, you know, look, if you own a bond fund, you're reinvesting the interest that gets distributed to you at lower prices. And if you own an individual bond, who cares? It's going to fluctuate. It goes up, down. But at the end of the term, you get back that part, that value of the bond. It's a $1,000 bond. You're going to get $1,000 back. So it's a thank you so much for actually sending this question in, because I have to say, it's just one of these, you know, niggling questions that people hate to ask because they feel dopey doing it. So the reality is that it is incredibly important to have some position in a fixed asset. Gives you diversification, but don't think that bonds have zero risk, okay? 855-411-JILL is the phone number, and our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
For a flying honeymoon, they say, come fly with me, let's fly away.
Annuities, IRAs, 401ks. She covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. And our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. And you know what? Finishing up on that bond conversation, because I got a question from Carol that was just seeking some clarification that about an article I wrote that rising interest rates could affect. I just explained this, that they can affect bonds negatively, but rising interest rates can also affect stocks negatively. Now, it depends how fast they are rising. And here's why. If interest rates are rising because the economy is generally improving, that's good. That's a good reason for rates to rise. And so, if the economy is improving and companies can make more money with their, you know, because things are improving, because confidence is improving, because people are making more money, rising interest rates not going to hurt the market. However, if all of a sudden prices start accelerating and the Fed is moving faster than everyone expects, then the stock market could actually be negatively impacted. And of course, rising interest rates, it makes it a little bit harder for companies to borrow money. But the real issue is that if stock prices are rising in anticipation that the economy is going really well and that there'll be slow, gradual rate increases, and all of a sudden they're much faster than expected, that could be a negative for stocks as well. So thank you for actually putting that out there. Okay. Here's a guy whose name is Guy. How about that? And so he had a question about what's the big deal about the alternative minimum tax? He's basically saying that I wrote in the article that the AMT, according to the IRS, AMT, alternative minimum tax, affects nearly 5 million tax filers. And he says, seeing as how there are approximately 8 million of the very rich, why aren't the 3 million people not paying AMT? So the reason is that because they may not be taking as many deductions, because it's the AMT gets triggered about around deductions that you take. So if you don't take a bunch of deductions and you don't have any itemized deductions, or you're not looking to or a lot of personal exemption, you may not fall into AMT. You may be really rich, but you're not. You're just paying high tax. And then Guy says, since I have you, can you explain the term entitlement to me? I kind of take offense to something I was forced to pay into, Social Security and Medicare, to be termed as an entitlement. Or is it that I am entitled to get the money back that I paid into it if I live long enough? So I don't know why it's called entitlement. I really don't. But you're not getting your money back from Social Security or, you know, just so we're clear, Social Security is a pay-as-you-go system. So what you're paying into right now is, you know, my mother's Social Security, essentially. That's what you're paying into. And when you retire, then your kids are paying for your benefit. So I don't really know. I guess I could do some research for you, but I wouldn't sweat it too much. Okay. Here's a question from Stuart. I'm wondering the rationale for advising seniors to have 12 to 24 months of income in an emergency fund, but only 6 to 12 months for someone who's still working. Seems to me the retiree has a more secure income flow with no risk of becoming unemployed. My wife and I live on Social Security and my pension. Since the mortgage has been paid off and some necessary upgrades to the house have been completed, most of my required minimum distribution is donated to charity. The rest is divided between the grandkids and our joint brokerage account. We have a money market that has about 10 months of income, and the joint brokerage account is seen as a secondary tier for emergency funds. The reason that we say more for seniors is that it's about medical. It really is about medical and health. Just to have enough money that's set aside so that you can pay for the various unknowns that could crop up. And sometimes those things that crop up are way more expensive than you can imagine. So it's not, and if you've got a whole bunch of money that's already set aside, then I wouldn't worry too much about it. Okay? I'm not going to tell you that you need to have, you know, exactly 12 to 24 months. As long as you have access to liquidity, as if you have access to this money, that's to me really important. Oh boy. Okay, so I'm going to save this question. This is a guy who literally starts his email with, I may be taking my frustration with financial columnists out on you, but it is directed toward the vast majority of these types of columns. It really is hard for me, the person who wrote the article, to want to read this on the air after that introduction, but I'll read it to you next. I promise. How's that for a tease? You know what they say about, you know, you get more bees with honey? Get a little bit more. Be nice, ladies and gentlemen. Mark's having a bad day. You seem already better. Your mood is improving. Are you seething? Is that what's happening over there? Yeah. He's annoyed. He's seething. I'm annoyed for you. You see? I took on your annoyance. I'm hyper empathic. When my producer is not happy, I am not happy. Let's be honest. And when Mark is not happy, honestly, nobody is happy. So we'll be clear about that. Okay, when we return, I'm going to read this this note from Ron. We're going to find out why he's mad at financial columnists. And you are listening to Jill on Money. 855-411-JILL is our phone number. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. Hey, follow us on Twitter. Mark's been very busy. @JillOnMoney. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. Here comes Ron. He says he's taken his frustration out with on me about all financial columnists. He says, look, let's face it, with a proofreader to make sure my grammar is correct, I could write a column that says the market may go up, the market may go down, or the market may stay the same for a while. Almost all columnists and TV hosts always couch their advice with every popular may as the preface. Why? The reason why is that because people are people tend to take these blanket statements very literally, and there are securities laws, and you have to warn people that things could go wrong. So I might have an opinion about what's going to happen, but yeah, everyone's couching it. And I said, you know, I had said something about that I thought I was rooting for a correction. And he says, the only reason anyone would want a 10% or more correction is if they have idle money available. If not, the only way for the investor to buy stock, the dip in stock has gone down. Okay, the reason why I would want a correction is not just that I have money set aside, it's because I'm contributing money on an ongoing basis in my retirement account. So if prices go down by 10, 12, 15% every time I have a payroll deduction, I'm putting money in and the market is lower. And here's Ron's favorite bit of useful advice is buying a stock because it has a high dividend. Currently, a high dividend is pegged at anything over 2.5%. Oh, gosh. So anyway, he's basically saying, don't just buy it for the dividend. Yeah, I don't buy individual stocks anyway. So here's my Ron says, I'm coming to the conclusion that columns and other sources of financial advice that state something may or may not happen are not worth the effort to read. So don't read it. And don't take the time to write me to go like on this whole rant. If it, you know, like you don't like it, don't read it. Mark, is that being mean? I mean, I don't know what to say. Good Lord. We couch these things in this way because people tend to jump to conclusions. So you just want to pull them back. This is emotional stuff, Ron. Okay? Just come on. Work with me, people. It's tough stuff. You don't like it? It's okay. Turn the dial. Move on. It's all right. 855-411-JILL. Stick around. You know it's going to be fun. Ask Jill at JillOnMoney.com. Coming up next, we've got the big interview. We'll be right back. Well, I need-